So hi everyone, thank you for joining this week's W3C CCG call. Today, our main agenda is that we actually had the honor to invite Robin from Protocol Labs, the creator of Filecoin and IPFS, Interplanetary File System, to actually talk about what they're working on. But before we get to the main agenda, just want to do the admin stuff first. So first of all, just a quick reminder about the Code of Ethics and Professional Conducts. Just want to make sure that we all respect and acknowledge each other's perspectives. And we've been doing that for ages. I don't recall the last time there was any fights or big arguments. But let's continue to do that. All right, a quick IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Make sure you have the W3C account, and if you encounter any issues, please feel free to reach out to me or any of the co-chairs. All right, quick call notes. These meetings are recorded, and we have an auto transcription on, and we will publish the minutes in a few days. We use GG chat to queue speakers during the call. So just type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue or Q minus to remove it. You can do Q question to see who is in the queue. All right. Introductions and reintroductions. If you are new to the community or you haven't been active and you want to re-engage with the community, please feel free to unmute yourself and introduce yourself. Okay. Next, announcements and reminders. Any announcements or reminders from the community? Lanyu, please.
Yep, a couple. The first one is a reminder to the community that the ECDSA crypto suite in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group is up for a vote tomorrow. I'll put a link to the announcement, crypto suite support needed here. So this is, as we've been saying, there's a call for adoption for the ECDSA crypto suite in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group tomorrow. If your organization has a need for this, like basically if you have a need for hardware security modules, when signing verifiable credentials or when using decentralized identifiers, then please sign the letter of support. So we have plenty of support going in. So that's announcement number one. Announcement number two is that we have another crypto suite called BBS that is going to go up for a call for adoption next week. And this is cutting it really close because feature freeze happens after the vote. So we get like one chance to get this in. There hasn't been a letter to go out, that you can sign to support it, but BDS is really important for selective disclosure in verifiable credentials and unlinkable signatures. So the ability to produce the same verifiable credential in a way that is privacy respecting. It's one of those, you know, cutting edge privacy enhancing technologies that we're trying to also get on the standards track at W3C. So very important for that one to be supported. Look out for that request on the mailing list this week. Please move immediately to sign that if your organization cares about selective disclosure or unlinkable signatures, because it will be going up for a vote next Wednesday. That's it for the two announcements.
Thank you, Manu. Any other announcements or reminders? Wow, it's a pretty quiet week. Some of us are affected by the SCB or something. People might be a little bit burnt out. All right. Any comments on the work items? All right. I will come back to, calling for introductions, reintroductions toward the end if we have time. All right, let's get to the main agenda. So this week, as I shared earlier, we're very glad to have Robin from Protocol Labs. Protocol Labs actually develops the Filecoin, the decentralized storage, and the IPFS, interplanetary file system. And I know throughout the years, this community has been quite intrigued. And actually, there have been some community members who have expressed that they would like to learn more about IPFS. So, and actually, I think we have someone from Ceramic, Ceramic Network, actually presenting about Ceramic a few months back. And Ceramic is built on top of IPFS. So very, very intrigued about what Protocol Labs are building. And we're very, very honored and pleased to have Robin actually to share their latest development and works. So Robin, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And the honor is entirely mine. Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm trying to make sure my screen is shared. I'm not seeing it being shared.
You were shared before, but right now.
I was shared before. Did you see the slide before when I was sharing?
Yes.
Okay. So hang on. Let me do this again because it didn't show for me. So. The usual fun. Screen and reshare. Screen two. Do you see a big goggly spider?
Yep, we see the. Okay. We see the background. We don't see the screen. We don't see the slides. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. That makes it less interesting without the slides. Hang on. You just see the background. You still just see the background, right?
We see your mouse cursor and the background. Robin, if you wanted to throw it into a PDF and send it to the mailing list or one of us, we could display while you talk through it as an option.
Hang on. Just let me try one last thing. And if that doesn't work, I'll toss you a PDF. I don't know why it doesn't want to share.
It looks, Robin, like you have a Mac running two displays and your presentation is on the other display.
So I do have a Mac running two displays, but if I share display one, here's what you're going to see. And maybe that's the trick to making it work. Come on. Let me share. Oh, now Jitsi won't even let me press the button. But if I shared the other screen, I just showed the Jitsi thing. Consider mirroring. Yeah. Okay, hang on. Let me try this.
Take your time. Don't worry about
one. Okay. So now, if I do this, can you all see yourselves?
Yes.
Okay, that's step one. Maybe now if I move this in front. You still don't see preview, do you?
No, we just see the Jitsi screen.
It's weird. It's as if preview refused to. Okay, I'll email it to, hang on. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you can email it to me, and then I can share the screen. Oh, we're seeing it.
You see it?
Wait, what happened? I did nothing.
I'm just screen sharing it to mess with you.
Oh, you have it. Of course, you have it.
I have an old one, though. I have an old one. If it changed substantially, send me the new one in parallel.
So you're missing one joke, but that's okay. Well, thank you. Thanks a lot, Juan.
I'll have to make it verbally, and you'll have to say next slide, please, each time.
I will. Thank you very much. Thanks a lot for jumping on this.
Yeah, that works. So, that worked. I thought it was a magic. I was like, wait, it just works.
And it was weird because that was not the slide I was showing on my screen. I was like, whoa. Anyway, let's get to it. Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks a lot for the invitation. So very quick intro for those I haven't had the pleasure to meet yet. I work on governance at standards at Protocol Labs. Before that, I was at The Times for 5 years, and I've spent way too much time over the past 25 years working on W3C stuff. I've been on the tag, still working on privacy principles. I invite you to check them out. They're up for wide review now if you're interested in privacy. I'm also on the W3C board, but obviously I'm not speaking for the W3C board because they don't work on this kind of stuff. And so, this is a pretty informal presentation. It's basically in two parts. First, I'm going to go through pretty quickly, a refresher about IPFS, just to make sure that everyone's on the same page. And then I'll talk about the stuff that I've personally been working on. It's informal. Just like jump in, any question, anything you find outrageous, holler, scream, whatever. So let's jump into IPFS. So there's like four components it's a huge ecosystem, but like there are four components that we can think about. There's Protocol Labs, which is the company I'm working on that does research and is building protocols in this area. There's IPFS. So IPFS is somewhat misunderstood in the community, but it's best to think of it as a P2P version of HTTP. It's not, people tend to think about it as some kind of BitTorrent, which it isn't. It's much more like, if you think about HTTP, but in which you don't need a centralized server, that's IPFS for you. And, in addition to IPFS, the Filecoin Foundation and Filecoin itself, provide a storage network that integrates with IPFS in ways that we'll see afterwards. Next slide, please. So, essentially the absolutely most fundamentally important concept in IPFS is the concept of a CID. A CID is an identifier that's generated from the content. So it's content addressable, just as you'd be familiar with from Git and any number of similar systems. And so instead of using a system of external authority, it uses intrinsic self-certifying authority in order to find content. For those of you who are interested in the history of the web, I do encourage you to go read for instance, Timbal's design notes, or the earlier work of the tag back in the early 2000s. It's very interesting to see just how committed they were to this idea of having an authority stemming from the scheme and stemming from DNS. And then inside of that, the idea was really that you would own this a strong notion of federated ownership over that naming space, to the point that when things like robots.txt happened, or, .wellknown, happened, that people back then were talking about expropriation, because you were expropriating names, from what should have been absolutely local ownership. Now, of course, what happened next, we all know. If you own something, then you can give it away, and people lost actual authority over what they were doing on the web. So CIDs really help, and I'm insisting here because I'm sure most of you are familiar with CIDs and content addressing, but I think it's really important to understand that how central they are to IPFS. Next slide, please. Yes. and so, as I was saying, you know, the core value of CIDs is that they can be reproduced by anyone, and therefore they can be verified by anyone, and it allows for self-certifying content distribution. Next slide, please. And really, that's where, yes, that's where I'm repeating this, because I think it's a concept that's really key. IPFS can feel a bit sprawling, because once you start digging into how it works, there's the entire P2P stack. There's a whole slew of like, somewhat novel acronyms that people in the more HTTP world might not be familiar with. But really, if you want to think about what IPFS is, it's the space of things that you can interact with using a CID, and that's it. That's really all there is to think about in that space. And so, you know, maybe you're acquiring the content directly, over a sort of traditional IPFS implementation. Maybe you're getting it from a gateway. Maybe it's local. It doesn't matter. So long as you're interacting with a resource using a CID, you're in IPFS space. Next slide, please. And so, you know, this is not something that's entirely abstract. IPFS is a set of systems that has increasing deployment and an increasing number of implementations. Right now, we're going through the teething pains of specifying and standardizing things properly to make sure that the implementations are interoperable. But I just wanted to show that you can access IPFS content directly in some browsers. Here we have the Brave browser, this is a growing field. There's work for IPFS protocol handling in Chromium. So this is a growing space, and you can expect to see more IPFS far more normalized in at the intersection of Web 2 and Web 3 in the coming month and years. Next slide, please. And so, the key thing with IPFS is, you know, if there's no node serving your content, then that content just cannot be retrieved. It might exist somewhere in the abstract, but it won't be on the network. And so there's several ways in which content can be made available over IPFS. The first and easiest one is, of course, just to like run your own node. And then you can scale this up, right? You can run a series of nodes that are maybe geographically distributed so that you can handle increasing load. Or then you can start working with a company that might pin your content for you. So this is basically what you would do if you want to serve content over IPFS, but say you don't have your own hardware, or you don't want to have your own hardware, or you want to distribute it over multiple sources. One thing that's really great here is that you can start working with, you know, one pinning service. And if you don't like them, if you want to just like transition to your own, since it's all content addressable anyway, the content can easily move anywhere and no one's going to notice so long as it stays up. And of course, you get to the case where if your content is particularly popular and people want to cache it themselves and make it available themselves, then this becomes you can start benefiting from that effect. But it's not something that will happen automatically for you. And next slide, please. And so, you know, part of that idea of hosting and storing data over the long term is why Filecoin was built. I'm not here to like sell you on Filecoin. It's just to explain how it builds on IPFS. And so basically, it's a massive decentralized storage network with huge capacity and a consensus system built to reward people for storing and to make storage reliable over an IPFS system. Next slide, please. And so, you know, pretty straightforwardly, again, I'm not going to go into great detail here. It's just to give a rough sense of what this is. But, you know, essentially it's a deal making system in which a client can make it, can strike a deal, for storage and then provide storage. And then the system has a series of ways of proving, that the data, is properly stored and of penalizing people who fail to store, storage, as promised. And then a retrieval market to get the data back out. And the idea here is to go fully cloudless, and to enable infrastructural systems that can be shared at the level of the entire internet, in a way that's interoperable and that can support, any kind of, any number of providers. Next slide, please. And, you know, as part of that, also, one thing that I like to point people to, is in part because this stack can be unfamiliar to web developers. I find that it can be good to get started using Web3 Storage, which is a really smooth and nice interface, to IPFS or Filecoin. Basically it integrates really well with JavaScript, and they have some UI components that they're shipping. And you can basically drag and drop this, drop this into your app and easily interact, with IPFS, using the libraries and their components. It's pretty neat. Next slide, please. And so that was, you know, basically the very quick refresher on IPFS. I hope it wasn't too fast or too confusing. And of course, you know, feel free to ask questions. So if you don't jump in with questions right now, you can also ask them later. I'm going to switch to the stuff that I've been working on and how I'm trying to figure out ways, you know, with a bunch of lovely colleagues, to figure out how IPFS and the web, work together. Yes, Benny?
Yeah, I just wanted to connect a few dots for some in the community that might not know that we're already using a number of these technologies when it comes to decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. Some of the lower level things like multibase, multihash, multicodec were all things that were kind of built, you know, for IPFS to kind of achieve some of the technical things that that Robin's been, you know, talking to. So they're already primitives that this community is using from IPFS. And then at a higher level, and you're probably going to get into this, Robin, there's a desire, I think, among a number of people in the community that want to do more, with content address storage like IPFS. Like if you have a verifiable credential and it links off to, you know, a set of pictures or proof or a document of some kind, what you really want to be able to do, if it's a large document, is not necessarily point back to, you know, like centralized storage for that thing, whatever it is, picture, evidence. You want to be able to point to some kind of decentralized network that is storing these things, in some cases for the good of society, in other cases to make sure that, you know, it's highly available. So I just wanted to clarify that, like, there's a lot of overlap, in the work that you're doing, in the work that, you know, Protocol Labs and the IPFS folks are doing in some of the needs, you know, of this community when it comes to verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers. That's it.
Right. Yeah. No, I completely agree. Yeah. Thanks. That's a very good call out. And actually I've been wondering if VCs might be used, with the work that like Starling Lab has been doing about documenting, war crimes and the such. I think that there's definitely many meeting points in there. So yeah, thanks. I think that's very, very much worth calling out. So jumping into the web stuff, next slide, please. I want to be like super, super, clear here, you know, what I'm talking about is highly speculative. When we say that we're an R&D lab, it is certainly true. I'm going to stay a high level. A few of you have seen some bits of this work and know that the basically ideation document is 15,000 words long already, and that like already lacks details. So I'm compacting a lot of that into a tiny space. And also, this may contain traces of philosophy. It's not purely engineering. So, but let's jump in. And if there are any things that any specific aspects that call upon your fancy, don't hesitate to jump in. So as you know, things are bad on the web. Next slide. I don't think this will come as a surprise. You know, most of the web is highly centralized, captured. And you know, if we were getting some good products out of all this centralization, maybe we'd still be bothered, but at least we get good products. But the result is pretty unimpressive. Generally, the tools we're getting are actually quite terrible, certainly for the cost. And you know, in that context, time spent on web instead of apps keeps dropping, despite the fact that we're being told that all this centralization and all this infrastructure is supposed to be helping keep the web alive. And then there's all these problems of like, you know, privacy and harassment and disinformation that you've heard about. And so in general, we can say that the internet is a failed state and things are not currently working great. So the question is, you know, what can we do about it? Next slide, please. So, you know, we should be trying to figure out how to fix the web, and, you know, what, how to drive the web forward and where the web should be headed. But the thing is, very funny one. The thing is we don't actually have a definition of what the web is. A lot of people care, you know, there's people who want like web 2 and web 3 and web 5, which is the joke that is not on the slide because it's slightly old. And there are people who say there's only one web, but we don't say what it is, or that we're leading the web to its full potential, which is the WPC's motto, but no one knows what that full potential is. And so we kind of need some alignment of, you know, what the web is in order for all of us to be moving in something that might not be the same direction, but at least roughly moves forward. Next slide, please. And so, you know, the question comes back, and this is something that many groups have tried to address and failed to address over the years, which is the question of like, what actually is the web? You'd sort of want to say, you know, well, maybe it's all the stuff that's over HTTP, but there's a lot of people doing things over HTTP that you wouldn't consider the web. They're just like API calls between various backend systems. So it's not that. Some people would want to say it's everything that runs in a browser, but that's also very limiting. And also it includes things that we probably would like to exclude from the web, like PDF. And yeah, there's the classic vision of like, I know it's the web when I see it, but that doesn't help us, figure out a way of moving forward. So we don't really have a definition of what the web is. And so, you know, I've decided to see if we could like figure out one and use that as, you know, a North Star to move towards. Next slide, please. And so the idea really is that you can find no constancy in the bundle of technologies that we tend to agree is the web, or have agreed is the web over the years. And so instead, the idea is really that the web is a project, the web is a set of values, and it's a set, you know, it's basically the set of digital network technologies that work to increase user agency. Now, that might seem a bit vaguish, but it actually backs off, next slide, please, from a fundamental, from a pretty important philosophical doctrine. And that is the part where there's a little bit of philosophy. I know that's not always popular in all circles, but I do encourage people to pay attention to at least some of that philosophy. Simply because when we don't, we're just like doing it without knowledge of it. Next slide, please. And so that philosophical foundation that I think maps really well to the notion of user agency is the capabilities approach that Nussbaum and Sen have developed over the past, I'm gonna say 30 years or so. And basically it's an idea of social ethics that was built for development. And it's entirely centered on the idea of increasing what each person is able to do and able to be. And really there's several, advantages to this. I'm not going to, you know, I could like probably do a 2-hour course on this, and I will spare you. But fundamentally it's meant to be testable, because it was meant to be used as a grounding rule for actual development, and to solve like real world problems like poverty. It's a good match for the kind of problems we have, because a lot of technologies tend to remove agency, especially centralized technologies. But if you look at like all the efforts to drive, machine learning deep into search engines, that gives people less and less control over what they're searching for. It's just like, you know, generating an answer and that's it. And the idea is to drive in a different direction that actually puts more power in the hands of people. And this has all kinds of consequences. It helps people organize better. It helps people drive the systems around them better, and it generally helps systems improve. So again, I'm not going to go into great detail, but that is basically the central focus. Next slide, please. And so you might be thinking, okay, that's nice. You figured out a philosophy, and yes, I do think it was important to start from figuring out where we wanted to go, like go all the way back to first principles. But you know, from there, what do we want to build? And so I can't cover everything that we're thinking about. I'll include the link to the longer thing, but let's look at least one of the basic primitives that's in there. Next slide, please. The primitive that we're building is based on the idea that we've been caught in this browser paradigm that's really good at document retrieval, and we've been trying to take it beyond document retrieval into app space. And you know, apps are kind of like pretty important if you want to put more power in the hands of people. They need to be able to not just read things, but do things. And over the past 25 years, we've tried a million things. And just listing a few here, you know, hi Ben. We've been using pretty much everything we've had in our hands to try to do packaging and to try to ship apps to people. And we've systematically failed. Like it's almost like on the clock, every 4 years, the W3C has a workshop that is on a variation of like, how do we expose powerful capabilities, and how do we package things up so that people can install them? We've had widgets, we've had binary XML packaging, which might sound funny, but I was there. We've had a few successes like it's funny, the transcriber read boner XML. That's actually better. Anyway, so I could go on, but it's been a success. It's been a succession of failures for 25 years. And so, you know, if we can't solve it, what is the problem? Next slide, please. Instead of trying to reapproach the same set of problems, we figured out that there might be a different way of doing of getting there. And the idea is to experiment, and we're starting to hack on them with these things we've called provisionally at least tiles, and they answer to a few basic requirements. One is that they're safe by default, and by safe by default, we're actually really strict. Pretty much all of these previous app-like things, they could all connect to the network right away with no restrictions. Essentially any extra power you give to them, they can use immediately in pretty bad ways, at least in privacy violating ways. And we know from, you know, having actually been on the web, that is something that people will abuse systematically. And so the thing is, since people will abuse it, one of the founding ideas here is, well, let's just remove that. Let's make it impossible for these things to, at least at first, touch the network. because they're safe by default, it also means that we can make them powerful by default. And so that's an interesting thing. Instead of having all these endless discussions about permissions and consent mechanisms and security mechanisms that we know don't work because we haven't solved the problem of prompting people for permissions in a way that they will meaningfully act on. Because they're safe, we just make them powerful by default. Any functionality that you can't use to break or destroy data, to break the device or destroy data, since you can't exfiltrate it, we just make it available. And now, on top of that, in order for them to be safe by default, the first time you load them, you have to be able to load them in a way that's indirect and not necessarily from the source, so they are location agnostic. And this has, like, as a consequence that they have to be packaged, because you can't do, like, back and forth as you would when you're loading an HTML document, for instance. And it automatically makes them local first, because since they can't addressable, you know, installing it, scare quotes, installing it just means having it. There's no difference. And so, you know, these are all things that might seem like unrelated to IPFS, but actually IPFS, if you use it with, you know, the IPLD, which is the data layer, CAR, which is a packaging format, and also like a strict CSP, this allows you to create this packaging format that has these properties. And Greg asks, but what do they do? That's a very good question. A GETS over HTTP are also disabled. So this is super strict. You cannot touch the network. Once you've loaded the thing is running. What can they do? Well, they can have like any arbitrary, HTML, JavaScript, images, SVGs, CSS, you name it, inside, and they can run as like small contained web apps, but they just can't touch the network. You might be thinking, well, that is a pretty stringent limitation, and it is. And so, if we go to if we keep going down the slides, I'll explain some of the stuff we can do with it. Again, this is like super early days, super speculative, super experimental. So, you know, I'm not promising anything. I'm just like explaining what we're working on and the approach we're taking. The idea being that you know, maybe we'll find this doesn't work, but I do think there's a way to make these interesting. And so, you know, losing the ability to interact with a network loses a lot of what we tend to think about in you know, what you need to create a web app. Well, you kind of need to store data. But you know, because they serve by default, we can also give them access to a lot of local information that can be stored in the user's agent. And we can also make them composable with one another. Today, you know, we keep hitting that wall of cross-origin issues, and we keep actually restricting the ability for web pages to talk across origins. You know, like third-party cookies, for instance, are disappearing, which does make it hard to maintain state across origins. And so here, the idea is to like reinvigorate the idea of intents and activities, which are basically a declarative way to connect multiple pieces of code. And so you can have multiple tiles, any one of which can handle any number of intents, and you can use that to have them talk to one another. And that means that you can start, like, you know, for instance, you could install a tile that manages your local image data store and can provide images to another that the other might want to, I don't know, establish a profile picture. So those are things where you can think of these as units of functionality. Part of the idea here being that we've been trying to put apps on the web, and apps are already a bad idea off the web. You can go back 40 years of UI research with every time UI researchers coming back and saying like, well, actually these bundles of like functionality that we put inside apps are really not a great way of answering the needs that people have, but we keep getting stuck on them. So instead of putting apps on the web, this is more about like making a web of apps, or of like app functionality that can sort of like be built dynamically by people without them even having to think about it. And so, of course, you know, you still need at some point to go back to, yes, the apps are good for rent extraction. That is true. That's actually the whole purpose of the bundling. But you do want to go back to the network. Sometimes, you know, it's important to maybe be able to communicate with other people. And so in order to do so, the idea is to restrict interactions to things that can be partially user mediated. So you can't like arbitrarily open a request to something else, but you can interact with, the agent's native support for a number of protocols. And these can include, social protocols, like all the activity pub stuff. The idea is that they also have to include an idea of native search because, you don't want to have search run by websites. That's a terrible idea. And, you know, you also need to be able to make money. And so there's a series of native protocols, that basically these tiles can interact with, but they can only interact with them in ways that are either, user mediated or that can be reasoned about, by the user agent so that it can prevent, the exfiltration of data. Again, you know, I understand that this is very, very, vaporware-y. But you know, the idea is that we're using IPFS to build this new category of this new primitive, and we're experimenting with ways of making it work. Yes, Manu?
Yeah, just a question about the way you're intending it to be constructed, and this may turn into like a requirement, right? So this kind of community has this use case around this concept called the digital wallet. And the idea is that It's kind of analogous to your physical wallet. You have things in your physical wallet that you carry around with you. So one example of this would be like a digital passport goes in your digital wallet, and you would hope to have access to that digital passport on your mobile device and maybe on your laptop and maybe on a desktop, right? So there's this concept of shared storage between your devices. Applying this tile concept, which is, you know, fantastic. Like this is really interesting, you know, cool stuff. One of the things we keep seeing over and over again is like IPFS as applied to public content or semi-public content. I don't know if there's been, or I guess, could you tell us kind of what thought has been put into, private content, meaning content that you really don't want replicated, that you don't want exposed outside of your devices, but at the same time, you don't want centralized either. So, for example, you would like to run, a decentralized network between your mobile devices, your family's mobile devices, you know, whatever, to hold on to that truly, you know, private content that you don't want replicated. Where do you see something like that fitting in this architecture that you're talking about?
So that's a really interesting question. So, again, nothing has been implemented, but that two things, and I think they work in potential levels. One is, of course, you could have encrypted content over IPFS, which, you know, probably doesn't solve what you're looking for to the degree that you're seeking. But the idea is that you can like encrypt things and put them on IPFS, and someone could, you know, fetch the encrypted blob, but that's all that they're going to be able to do with it. And there are systems like WNFS, for instance, that use that. So that's one option. The other option is to go for things that involve, for instance, more local discovery or forms of private, networking. And so there's an implementation of a user agent that's experimenting with things on top of IPFS called Capiloon, by Fabrice Distraeta. It's really cool. And one of the things that he does with that is that he discovers peers over MDNS, and so he's able to basically discover from his mobile device to his laptop. He's able to initiate two-way connections without going over any kind of public network. Now, these are just like two options that exist. It doesn't mean that they're the only options. Like you could imagine you know, completely private, but like more distributed, systems that with the same properties, existing. Does that answer your question?
It does. So I guess based on that, I'm imagining like a tile that has some kind of, you know, native API to a more decentralized, but private file storage. So the two options, you know, the encrypt something on a public network, probably not going to work for large corporations that don't want to do mm-hmm. that necessarily, right? But still want some of the advantages of decentralization. I certainly wouldn't want my encrypted passport being stored on IPFS, at least today, right? What I'd be hoping for is something that is still decentralized, but within a group of, you know, nodes that I trust, meaning like you can walk away from rent seeking if you see it mm-hmm. being used against you. So I think with that approach that you're talking about, it would be like a tile that, or the platform exposes a native API that allows you to do that kind of discovery of, you know, only the nodes that you trust to store that very private data.
Correct. Yeah. You can actually, I mean, nothing says that you have to be on, you know, the global IPFS network. You can absolutely run a private version of it. And so you could run it in an enterprise system, you know, maybe behind a firewall or whatnot. But you could also run it, you know, as some kind of like secret private, version just for you and your friends. All of this is possible. And yes, it could, that's not specifically a problem that I've been working on to solve right now, but yes, it's entirely feasible. And so unless there are other questions, I'll jump to the next slide, please. And so part of the difficulty in doing this, and the reason I don't have much to show, I mean, this we're working, like Fabrice has been doing stuff in Capilouin. I'm doing stuff, to experiment with it as well. But part of the difficulty is that you cannot get to this new notion without also changing, the UI. So this is not something that's incremental in the browser, or at least not running inside a tab, because you can't really get to this notion of isolation with multiple tiles, cooperating, and with a good experience. If you're stuck inside this tab metaphor. So, you know, with all the risks that we absolutely know and have experience with in terms of going different routes, this is something that has to be done, outside, not necessarily outside the browser, but at least outside of tabs of the tab system, because that is really holding us back. Next slide, please. And so, yeah, I'll share the links in a more usable form, maybe if one is doing it right now. But so, you know, for people who are interested in IPFS, I do recommend that first link there, has a bunch of like tutorials, that go into a decent level of detail. If people want to know more about this crazy tile thing, there's a big messy draft. If you're more patient and you don't need to read it like this week, you can wait a little bit. And I'm in the process of turning that into a series of articles that will be spaced out over time as we figure these things out. You know, as a last one, just like this is purely a shameless plug. In case you're interested in the broader topics of governance, that we're thinking about, that is basically the write-up there that matches that. And with that, we can go to the last slide. And thank you very much again for inviting me and having me here and for the questions. And if there's anything else you want to ask about, I'm more than happy to answer. That's I love that sound effect every time. Yes, Juan.
All right, Bumblefudge.
Oh, nothing. Sorry, I was just trying to make the sound.
Yeah. I do have a kind of newbie question, but how how do you do do like the CIDs or update to the CIDs when the content changes or updates?
So I mean, you don't update a CID at all. The CID being content addressable, if the content changes, then the CID changes. What you want is, a CID is purely immutable. Now, if you want mutability, there's a layer called IPNS, which basically pairs a key, to a CID, or something else. And so this makes it possible to keep referring to the same thing, but with a CID that changes over time. It's mutable addressing. Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
There are other things. There are people working on alternative naming systems. So like Blaine Cook is working on something called the name system. There's a number of like, pet naming, layers. So IPNS is one option and it's, I would say it's the dominant option. But there are people looking at alternatives as well.
Thanks. And Smart Janice, you're next on the queue.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Stephen Guest. Yeah. So, hey, admittedly, you know, I'm just starting to get more into IPFS and super fascinated. But one thing I've noticed is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of conversation around the notion that suddenly we really can't remove data once we've pinned it or posted it out there, which seems to be just kind of inherently problematic. I just want to kind of get your thoughts on that. If I'm looking at this the wrong way, or maybe there are folks that are working on ways to get around that the issue?
You're not at all looking at things the wrong way. so there's this is something that has been noticed, and I agree with you that the conversations aren't, haven't fully taken off yet, but there's something that we recently launched, which is this. And actually, Juan, do you want to say a word as our current chair?
Oh yeah, sure. There's a decentralized data compliance working group. It's sort of exploratory, and to be honest, I think that most people in it are assuming there are like two or three layers of control between content and CIDs. Like, it isn't like you just upload JPEGs in regular CID on open IPFS and just say, here are my baby photos of my child. There's always presumed to be at least IPNS or some sort of authorization layer, Web3 storage and, you know, Fission are both doing like, ZCAP style authorization layer that would have a lot of different intermediate artifacts that can be deleted that would break the retrievability of data. What else can I say? Yeah, I mean, it sort of depends like what you call a platform or what you call a network, because if it's, you know, IPFS being a protocol, you can make networks within it that are variably closed or bounded. So, yeah, that's what. Sorry, put me on the spot. I ramble.
I'm also pasting a link. We worked with New Design Congress on problems in that space, right? And so they produced this report, which I encourage you to read if you're interested in that topic. And by all means, like come and speak to us at the DDC working group if you have issues. I posted the link higher up as well. You know, we're trying to solve these issues.
Great, thank you.
All right. Bingo, you're next in the queue.
Robin, my question is, like, do you have a point of view on how, like, in your vision of tiles, if we have a CID and we wanted to make that a URI, what might the URLs look like, if anything? Because given that CIDs aren't URL.
That's a good question. This is something that we're thinking about. So one option would be to use the IPFS scheme, and the IPFS scheme uses the CID as the authority, and then you can path into it. The issue with that is that it doesn't have clear semantics in terms of whether you can load other things, what kind of context you load it into, et cetera, et cetera. So Fabrice and I have been talking about using a tile scheme. And the idea of the tile scheme is that it's kind of similar. It takes a CID as its authority and it supports a path. But it also enforces strict CSP rules by default without having to rely on anything else. And so that could be a good option. But we haven't finalized that yet. And so if you have opinions, they're definitely welcome.
Thanks.
I do have a question. So my impression and my experience with some decentralized applications is that the speed and performance is slow. And as we know, like, speed and performance is quite important for applications and UX. So my question is, if my impression is correct, like, what are the works that's ongoing to kind of address the speed and performance issue?
You mean of IPFS in general, or?
Yes, like, because the retrieval of the content can take, even though it could be fast in the sense of, like, you know, millisecond, but like for applications where you're building, you know, mass, direct to consumer applications, like, speed and performance is paramount, right? So if my impression is correct about decentralized, technology being slower than the current technologies, like, how are we going to address these issues?
Right. So, I mean, it's not intrinsically slow. So there's a number of I think, you know, compared to, say, HTTP3, it hasn't been optimized as much yet. For instance, there's a prototype called Rapide that can currently do multiplex fetching, and that can, like, that has, like, really interesting performance properties. There's work on indexing to make sure that speed is up to, you know, is up to par. And there's also the next generation IRO implementation is going to be focused. It seems, I can't speak for them, but from what I heard, is going to be focused on performance. And they seem to believe that they can get this to be really, really fast. It's certainly not super fast just yet. But from what I've seen in terms of prototypes and work that moves this forward, I don't think it's intrinsically slow. I haven't seen any evidence that it is.
Got it. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. We're at time, and thank you, Robin. Thank you again for taking the time to present and lead the discussion here. If you don't mind, like, can you send the presentation to me,
of course,
and then I will include that? Yeah, that would be great. Okay. All right. Thanks. Yep. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Take care.
This concludes this week's meeting, and you know, you can see the upcoming meetings in the W3C calendar. W3C CCG calendar. All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.